Reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the 14th chapter, entitled The Three Modes of Material Nature, text number 21. Arjuna Vacha,
Arjuna Vacha,
Karlinga Stringananitan, Atito Bhavati Prabhu,
Atito Bhavati Prabhu,
Kim Achara Katan Chaitan,
Kim Achara Katan Chaitan,
Tringunan Ati Vartate,
Tringunan Ati Vartate.
Perfect. Translation. Arjuna inquired, O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of nature? In this verse, Arjuna's questions are very appropriate. He wants to know the symptoms of a person who has already transcended the material modes. He first inquires of the symptoms of such a transcendental person. How can one understand that he has already transcended the influence of the modes of material nature? The second question asks how he lives and what his activities are. Are they regulated or non-regulated? Then Arjuna inquires of the means by which he can attain the transcendental nature. That is very important. Unless one knows the direct means by which one can be situated always transcendentally, there is no possibility of showing the symptoms. So all these questions put by Arjuna are very important, and the Lord answers them. Well, I'll just read the answer also, because I couldn't answer it any better. I can try and answer it myself, but I think Krishna does a better job than me. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment and delusion when they're present, or long from them when they disappear, who's unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in place, in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, who has renounced all material qualities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. So we see here in the beginning of the answer, it is said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, the illumination that is referred to here is the result of the mode of goodness. Then it says attachment, the result of the mode of passion, and delusion, the result of the mode of ignorance. So it's like that, who is who neither hates or is attached to any of those. Rather one who is attached to Krishna. That is the criterion. It is difficult to judge who is transcendental, because we have people of various different natures. Some are soft-spoken. Some are very forceful. Some are, some have a sense of humor. Our Sridhar Maharaj, who at one point in his life was suffering from a disease and left his body. He was jolly the entire way. He never for a moment became depressed by it. He just laughed and made jokes and made others laugh. When his belly rod had become very big due to fluid inside, and he's lying on bed, someone touched it. And then suddenly the patient opened his eyes and said, it's a boy. So anti-dramatic that everyone, even now when we hear, we crack up. It is said when Indrajumna Maharaj went to see him for the last time, Maharaj was just taking a shower. Indrajumna Maharaj said, hurry up, I have to go, I'm going to miss my plane. I really have, and I want to say goodbye to you now. Then Maharaj said, oh, come in. And he just let him in. He said, we're friends anyway. Such a transcendental personality. So totally unaffected, near picture. So that is transcendence, not affected by the material things. In the material world, one has long ago said goodbye to the material world, right? As a place to be at home. Yes, we are here. And yes, we are acting within the material world, but home it's not. Because it's not a place to be happy. Therefore, because ultimately, true happiness is not found in material relationships. Not with a place, not with possessions, not in any relationship. True happiness is only found in the relationship with Krishna. Therefore, one who has transcended the 3 modes of material nature manifests attachment to Krishna. Maya shakta manaprata yogi union madhasrayaha asansiyan samagramam yatapyatyasi tatsrinu. There is no doubt that such a person is attached to Krishna, because where else to turn to? What else to love? We need to love. Everyone has a propensity, a need to love. So we love our family. We want to. It's not always easy. We love our country. We love place of our birth. We love money, yes, but all that is incomplete, incomplete. Prabhupada says the loving propensity is there even in animals, but the loving propensity can only be satisfied when it is directed towards Krishna, and that is transcendental. That is one who is no longer affected by the material energy. It's easy. It's not so dramatic. It's a matter of faith. There's a story about a girl, young girl in India, who was of marriageable age, and one day she was home alone, and just then, two unknown men came to the door of the house. And there was an elderly man and a younger man. When she saw that younger man, he reminded her of the prince she had been waiting for. And she decided that she wanted to impress him. So she decided to cook. Since men can be impressed this way. And she made all arrangements to make a first-class meal, including first-class rice, because in India they know their rice, if you know what I mean. So, she cooked a first-class meal, and in the process of trying to make first-class rice, she took a tray, took the rice, and threw it up in the air, because then the little stones and pieces of wood that could possibly break the tooth of the innocent eaters would not be in the rice, and it helps. Yes. Of course, nowadays that's all done by machines, and in the old days, like that. Anyway, as she was throwing up the rice, on her wrist she had many bangles and many bracelets, and they were making a clunking noise. So she realized that, they must hear this noise of the bangles. And when they hear it, they will realize that I don't have a servant to clean the rice. that we are too poor to have servants, then he'll never marry me. Not a good idea. So she broke off the bangles, all the bangles except for one. She left one bangle on each arm and threw up the rice, and no more noise, everything perfect. So this bangle story is a story which is speaking about ornaments and how we have many of our prize ornaments in life. Those things that we are proud of. Ah, yes, my family background, my nationality, my diplomas, 3 swimming diplomas. So many diplomas, you know, okay, lots of bangles there, and so on. So anything that adds to our prestige, the bangles. So all these bangles had to be broken until only one bangle remained, the Krishna bangle on either arm. And then it was possible, when there was no other interest. But when there were so many other interests, so many other prized, valuable, important ornaments in life, oh yes, then there was a collision, a conflict of interest. There was a conflict of interest arising between the two. And that's what happens. The more ornaments we have in the material world, the more conflicts of interest there will be in our lives. Yeah, and then you get these questions, you know what I mean? We're paying $100 a year for the frozen embryos. We call embryos. Should we keep on paying? I think so. Better pay now than pay later. What to do? That is the nature of things. So many complicated questions arise. I'm working in this castle. I'm involved in catering, and it's not vegetarian. Personally, I don't touch it. I get the people who work for me to do it. Do I get any reactions? Well, I thought I'd better ask you, is it okay? No, it's not okay. It's not only one who eats it, it's one who cooks it, one who serves it, one who transports it, one who gives the order for it. They're all implicated. So like this, conflicts of interests arise between just survival in the world and income. We need money, we need to live. And you don't always get it the way you want. Then what will you do? You're an artist and you know you need to do something, go into advertising, and you can't always say no. Yeah, when you have to advertise booze, maybe against your principles, but what to do? It's just part of the trade, you know, it's part of the job. What can you do? So, conflicts of interest, the more we want in this world, conflicts of interest remain. Therefore, we have to minimize our interest to only one, eventually. So that only Krishna's interest is our interest, and anything else, just put it aside. And if we live in that uncompromised way, everything will come, everything will become auspicious. There will be no doubt about it. So that is our, that will come, and that is a person who is transcendental through the 3 modes of material nature. Such a person is not affected. Of course it says that every work in this material world is covered by some fault. And that may be, when we cook in the kitchen, we light a fire and we burn up some minuscule living entities. Too bad, fire con Dios. For them, the party is over. Cooked in our vegetarian dinner. Yeah, what to do? So, like this, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult. Even a well-intentioned person. Then you have in India, you have these Jains. They walk around with masks and brooms to, you know, make sure they don't kill any creatures by their breath, that they don't kind of, step on some ants, sweep them off the road. But then the broom kills a couple. What to do? That was the broom. Bad broom. So how to avoid? So it is said, ahastani sahastanam apagani chatushpadam jivo jivasyaji. No, there's one more line. Forgot it. Jivo jivasyaji. No, it's the fourth line. It is said those who have no hands are food for those who have hands. Those who have many legs are food for those who have four legs. Ultimately one living being is food for another. That is the material world. So that's a heavy verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, which sort of seems to justify that one living being eats another. How about that? Yeah, but we eat plants. As human beings, we eat plants because human beings are in a different position than animals. An animal can do anything, and there's no reaction, because animals basically cannot make karma. Right? So if whatever an animal does, it may seem brutal. That is a fact. Sometimes very brutal, but there is no reaction, no karmic reaction for it. Animals only get the previous karma. But human beings are held accountable. And human beings, they get reactions. Therefore, for human beings, it is said, yakyasistasino sante muchante sarvakirubisai. They should only eat yakyasista, only remnants of what is offered in sacrifice. And then Krishna says, what is to be offered in sacrifice? He's saying a fruit, a leaf, a flower, some water. So, in that way, the vegetarian items. But what about those poor vegetables, anyway? An innocent cauliflower sticks its innocent head above the ground. Grows happily in the sun rays of spring to a healthy, mature cauliflower. And then some lovely looking lady, I mean, very innocent, angelic, walks into the garden, but what is she carrying in her hand? A monster of a knife. Oh my God. Oh no. What is such an innocent girl doing? With such a huge knife, she might get hurt. She might get hurt. No, serious. It seems she knows very well what she's doing, because suddenly, unexpectedly, she sneaks up to some cauliflower from behind and just decapitates him in one stroke. Cuts his head right off. My God. Who ever thought of such a thing from an innocent girl? Oh, no. Oh, poor cauliflower. No. Not at all. But she smiles sweetly while she's doing it. She seems to enjoy it as well. Yes. And then, she cooks the corpse. And after it's over, then she offers it to Krishna. And isn't that cauliflower most fortunate? Oh, fortunate cauliflower. Oh, yes. Perfection of cauliflower existence. Oh, what more could a cauliflower desire than to be offered to Krishna? This is the dream of every cauliflower. Yeah. in this way, we see how a cauliflower attains salvation. It could be a bestseller. Something like The Monk Who Stole My Ferrari. How a cauliflower attains salvation. Anyone wants to write it, you know, I guarantee you, the box will roll in. Yes, so suddenly the Krishna link changes everything. It makes something that otherwise is ugly and dramatic suddenly auspicious. And in that way, the Krishna factor changes everything. But of course, yes, according to Krishna's direction. Not that I do any damn thing and then say, for Krishna. No, not that way. He says, I'm the taste in water. No, we are... dedicating our life to fulfilling Krishna's will. And that is sometimes a narrow path, sometimes a wide path. That changes from moment to moment. But if we walk that path, then karma free. No reactions, no burden, no weight. Karma weighs us down. The more one collects bad karma, the more one becomes pulled down. It weighs down the consciousness and gradually makes us fearful. It makes us fearful for the reactions that are there. We can sense it. It's coming. The guilt is there. The fear is there. We know, actually. Of course, it's all rubbish, but still. In devotional service, one becomes free from such oppressive experience. One becomes light, very light. One becomes, therefore, jolly. One becomes joyful. One becomes very happy. One just feels, yes, I have nothing to worry about in the world. What is there to worry about? Nothing. Everything is fine. That is a fact. No matter what happens, of course, good and bad things may come, but anyway, it's all right. Because anyway, Krishna's there. So this is transcendental, and this is what we are trying to develop. So Bhagavad Gita is here setting a goal for us, something to strive for, clearly. Is clearly setting an objective of how we can become transcendental to the three modes of material nature, and also how we can recognize a person above the three modes of material nature. In the Vedic times, there used to be qualified spiritual masters who would accept disciples, just like now also. But now in our movement, in our society, that is bound to rules of a society. Right? And the society gives a stamp of approval, the official guru stamp on the heart. Must be there, otherwise not approved. So in the Vedic times there was no such certification of an institution. It was an individual matter between two people, a little more. One would find a person who one thought is representing the scripture. So first, a candidate should also study the scripture. And by studying such verses, he could understand who is qualified. And then, if he desired to take initiation from such a person, then he could take the blessings of the senior Vaishnavas, and that would protect him, the blessings. That was the protection mechanism. Instead of the rubber stamp of an institution, there was the blessing of the senior Vaishnavas. That's how it worked. And it could still work like that, actually, I think, but not everyone agrees. But that element of, in the Vedic culture, one is always looking for blessings of seniors, for senior Vaishnavas. And that is what is really the protective mechanism in the society. One doesn't act just like that, one seeks blessings. It's nice. It's a nice principle. So, to be transcendental is our aim. The three modes of material nature, as we hear here, from goodness comes some illumination. Some, not all the time, but moments of insight come from goodness. And gradually, but one is not fully situated in constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord. But one gets an idea that yes, this is the direction. And if one becomes fully situated, then one is transcendental. So the mode of goodness is leading up to the transcendental. The modes of passion and ignorance, they take us away from the transcendental. See, therefore they are dangerous. They are they bring attachment to matter and delusion, bewilderment. So they are to be avoided for sure. The mode of goodness in itself also binds us to the material world, but it's not as dangerous because the mode of goodness is approaching the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada said that we cannot just be in the mode of goodness. Some people are in goodness, some people are in passion, some are in ignorance, some are mixed. But you know, you cannot become in goodness by decision. And from this day on, I shall be in goodness. Don't look very much in goodness, looks more like passion. Therefore, what is recommended, perhaps, is we should associate with the mode of goodness. And that's a nice point. I like that a lot because it makes it sort of tangible. It makes it something that we can do something practical now. Associate with goodness. That means, okay, in our home, right? In our home, bring goodness into our home. Bring more goodness into our life. And the more we do so, the more we associate with goodness and the more the qualities of goodness will reflect in us. Because that's what's going on. When it comes to these modes of material nature, they exist within us and without us. Inside and outside, and they're not always the same. We can be in an environment of goodness and ourselves be in passion. Or we can be internally in goodness and externally the situations are in passion. Like that. One has to internally be in goodness, and then all the passion and all the ignorance will not affect us so much, because you have that inner goodness. That's important. I have used the example of the swan in the lake, which is representing goodness, and how a person in the mode of goodness was sitting there and said, oh, such an idyllic, wonderful place for meditating and deeper thoughts, you know, like, nice. Then a person in the mode of passion got there and said, God, this place drives me nuts, you know, it's nothing to do here. Let's see if that bird can fly. Throw a stone at the swan, man. Probably the one in ignorance thinks about eating the swan or something like that, you know. Yeah. Where a person in goodness would be abhorred. I mean, how could you eat a swan and such a noble creature? So, you know, someone in ignorance would say, well, it probably tastes good. looks good, so probably tastes good as well. Like that. Like that, we see the modes of material nature. So it's interesting to think about it that the internal modes of nature and the external modes of nature, they're not synchronized. But the more we have internally the modes of goodness, the more we will be benefited. The more we create in our environment an influence of goodness, the more we influence ourselves and begin to develop this goodness in us. So this is the trick. Therefore, one needs to live in a holy place. Ring, ding, ding, ding. Auspicious sounds. Get the full darshan. Thank you very much. So therefore, our residence must be a holy place. That's the idea. We must transform it. The more our residence is aimed at worshipping Krishna, remembering Krishna, and serving Krishna, the more auspicious that place becomes. And that's the idea. Not just that we make a nice house for us, the way I always wanted it, my favorite chair, my this, my that, everything for me. Home, sweet home. No. I'll bring a lot of Krishna in that home. And then that home will nourish us spiritually. And just by associating with Krishna, our attachment to Krishna will develop. So this is the spirit. So Krishna consciousness is like that. It's not a... it's not based on a sudden change of mind by determination. And now, on the 31st of December, I decide that from tomorrow on, I will be Krishna conscious. Doesn't work, these 31st December promises. Everybody knows. No. That's not the way to be Krishna conscious. Krishna conscious simply means bring more Krishna into our life. Bring more remembrance of Krishna in our life. Hear more about Krishna and do more for Krishna. Here's a Bhagavad Gita. Make sure there's one in your house and put it in a place and put it down on a table open. Don't leave it in the book cupboard where it stands for 50 years. Until the grandchildren one say, "Hey, Granny, what is that old book on the shelf there?" "Oh, that book. Oh, that's very nice. That's the Bhagavad Gita." And then you show it to your grandchildren, and you open it up, and the worms have been feasting on the book, and fall out the pages, and just. As you're about to read the Supreme Personality of the hole in the page, said, and you'll never know who that Supreme Personality was. Jeez. So put it open on the page. Right. If that doesn't help, a big sign there behind it. Read me. Can even get a recorded message. It's with a switch, a sensor, that when you walk past, that automatic say, "Would you like to read me?" Sometimes I have these things on airports with fancy cars. You walk past this car and you can win it in a casino. And so suddenly you walk past and this voice says, "Would you like to have me?" And walk past again. "Would you like to have me?" It's the car. You've never seen this? Hey, I fly a lot, you know. See a lot of I know my airports. Yeah, so what to do? These things are there. We are simply bringing Krishna into our life. And that's how you systematically become Krishna consciousness. So it's not difficult. It's not like a miracle, not like something mystic. How will I ever become Krishna conscious? I mean, I'm trying so much, and after all these years, it still doesn't work. Relax, relax. It works. Just bring Krishna in your life. Let him do the work. He'll attract us automatically. He'll capture us. The more we bring him in our life, the more we serve him. It is simple like that. So it's not from how will I adjust my consciousness so that I will always remember Krishna and never forget him. Easy, you know, do something for Krishna, serve him. Right? Put a picture of Krishna on your wall, it helps. Right? You might even remember him. Like that, you know. As simple as that. Bring more Krishna in life. And that is the secret, the simple secret of becoming transcendental. Mm. So, are there any questions or comments? Just an imitation.
Could you suggest some simple ways that we can bring more Krishna into our lives?
Can I suggest some simple ways to bring more Krishna into our lives? Well, how about offering everything we eat? That helps. Just take only Krishna prasad. Yeah. If you can't offer it, don't eat. That helps. That's a good beginning. And like that, Krishna himself would, in his daily life in Dwarka, show that early in the morning he would see auspicious things. He would see statues of cows. So do you have a statue of a cow in your house? Looks like you got to have one. Statue of a cow. Or two. And these nice cows. Krishna would give in charity. He would give in charity, especially to devotees. So that's also a good idea. So like that we can... we can do so many things. The first thing we do in the morning, we pay our obeisances. You wake up, pay obeisances, offer obeisances to Krishna. Then, in Hari Bhakti Vilas said, then one should recite the name of his worshipable deity. Yes. And then, while offering some prayers or chanting the holy name, one goes and takes bath. And then, after, put fresh tilak, and so on. So many things are given of in scripture, what one can do. And some of these things we should do. Basically, in the Nectar of Devotion, it is explained that we should... Scary. In the Nectar of Devotion.
Oh, I see.
No.
In the Nectar of Devotion, it is explained how we can engage the senses in the service of Krishna. So, it says one should use the legs to walk through the temple, or do service for Krishna, wants to use his ears for hearing transcendental music. One must his eyes to see Krishna. So all the senses simply connected with Krishna. The nose to smell the scent. We see in the temple they do these things. You see after Mangalayatik, if you come to Mangalayatik, then they come with a little stick and some perfume on your hand. So like this we are engaging, connecting the senses with Krishna. So that's one way. Make a nice altar at home and make offerings there. Some people have a huge temple at home. People you would never expect, you know. They just look like people that sort of, you don't see them too often. And, they don't look very serious. You come to their house, you see a huge temple. Huge whole thing going on. And so there was a nice slideshow of home altars. That was quite impressive, actually, to see what people were doing privately. Very inspiring. So one should do something. That's the trick. How to bring Krishna into your life. Do something to bring him into your life.
As you were saying about how people after many years of practice say that they're so frustrated because it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
But contrary to that, when we do engage in Krishna's service,
yeah,
and we try and do as much as we can, what would you say? How would you name what would be the most important indication as to whether we are being successful in our activities?
Prabhupada says the first indication is that we overcome material desires. Because when we are getting transcendental and we get really attached to Krishna, then we just are not interested in material enjoyment anymore. So Prabhupada says we measure by that. We see how much we are overcoming material desires. That's our yardstick. We're seeing how we are advancing. Otherwise it's difficult to say, it is said in the Nectar of Devotion that different people have a different type of heart. It's that some people have a cotton swab heart, a tiny little cotton thread that like in the slightest breath already starts to shiver. Oh, Krishna! Oh, Krishna! Cotton swab heart, And then you speak about the golden heart, like very grave and sort of not disclosing much feeling, but very dedicated. So, they're just different kinds of hearts, not on anybody's case for any particular type. It's all right. If you have cotton swab, don't feel bad about it. it's sort of adds a nice flavor that some people are expressing lots of emotions, My former wife used to tell me that I was a cold frog. Which, I wouldn't let anybody get away with, but when your wife says it, what can you do about it? One of those things. Now that I've read the Nectar of Devotion, I could explain it to her. golden heart, not that quantum swamp. But whatever it may be, so you cannot always judge it by the emotional expression of someone's devotion. And therefore, Prabhupada came up with this simple yardstick by how much you overcome material things. Yes, questions bring life in the whole afternoon. Come on, folks, just shoot your questions.
Jai Sitara.
That's sweet.
We say that Krishna gave such definitive information in this chapter about the three modes, so that we can use it as an analysis of every iota of our action, whereby we can then discern. Am I in this mode of ignorance? Is this activity in this mode? Is it in that mode? Is it in the mode of goodness? So that we can utilize the information to access the mode of goodness and beyond. It's not just a theory.
Good point. Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I sort of said that in return about this verse, right? That it also was meant for practical application, and you're making the point about the entire chapter, which is well taken. So Bhagavad Gita is not at all just a theoretical book, it's very practical, and it gives us a handle on reality. Nice point.
Yeah. I was just wondering, you were talking about how externally there's a different mode and internally. I feel sometimes in the morning that's mode of goodness, but I'm mode ignorance.
You get a mixture of goodness and ignorance in the morning. It flip-flops.
I was just wondering how to get the internal mode.
How to get the internal path going. Right. Okay, no worries. Should be right. Like I said, Prabhupada's solution was to associate with the mode of goodness. And that's, I think, is an interesting key, rather than merely by our own effort, based on determination, bringing about a transformation. No, by bringing more goodness into our life, in our external life, the internal will be cultivated. Yeah, then of course we can, to some extent, try to make some adjustment based on determination. No? But, just like gave the other day the example, you can probably can say, I'll never lie again. Well, that was the first lie you spoke. So, what to do? What to do with it? It's not so simple. It's not just all by determination. It's by cultivation.
It's over.
Okay. I can, of course, start again, start another lecture, but...
Because
I came from so far for so short, and then you just feel like, geez, you know. Isn't that what I traveled such a long distance for? And now I'll be back in September. But yes, I traveled for such a long distance to say a few words on the Bhagavad Gita, to just once again re-emphasize that it's the Bhagavad Gita. It's the Bhagavad Gita which is our refuge. I told you, leave it open on the table and even turn the pages sometimes. And while you're turning it, you might even read a few words. Why not? Somehow or other, if we could only make that part of our daily culture, to read from the Bhagavad Gita every day, even if it's only one verse. And that kind of New Year's promise one could also take in the middle of the year, that's useful. So, way. Read one verse after this lecture. If this lecture could convince one person to read one verse of Bhagavad Gita every day, then it would be worth flying all the way to the Cape. With that, I thank you so much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada.